week's episode of Geo Talk, we hear about a reward to find the two lost Australian ape caches. We get the answer to how to store maps on your Android phone, and five steps to writing a better log. All this and more on Geo Talk. Well, welcome to Geo Talk, episode 91 for September 2012. A month that I think the spin doctors in some part would like to forget. It's been a month where we've been on and off with sickness and illness and haven't really gotten out and done much geocaching, to be honest. In fact, I think so far this year or this month we've found two. Which means we're really pulling down our average at the moment. But as I mentioned before the last episode, we went to Fiji and we've come back and seems to have gone downhill since then, but had a great time. 2 weeks lounging about, enjoying the warm weather, and also finding about half a dozen caches. And thank you very much to the people that have hidden those caches and also to the guardians that look after them. There's some great caches out there. We hired a car and travelled down to the Coral Coast to find a few. Thank you to Astro Dave for his tips on some of those down that way, and also to the cache owner of the Survivor cache that we found on Munna Island. And if you have a look at the logs for that cache, you'll find that I didn't find it the first time. I mean, in fact, even after I logged it, I did a little bit of investigation, as a good journalist would, and noticed that the cache isn't hidden where Survivor was filled. In fact, Survivor was filled on the other side of the country, but it was hidden near a set of another reality show that never actually made it to air. Needless to say, it was a fun cache, and you can check it out. Go to GC3AP8W. That's GC3AP8W, or I'll give you a link in the show notes, and you can check it out. It's quite a fun cache, and if you ever head to Fiji or any of the Pacific Islands, why not have a go at if you can find a cache while you're out there. One cache that I have found since I got back home, one of the two that I found this month, was Wild Dogs, which is located out in the Canangra Blue Mountains National Park, and really took me back to my roots of geocaching, back to the old days of finding an ammo can after a very long walk. In fact, this one was, I think it was 15 k's in and 14 k's out. So we made it an overnight hike and camped out on a plateau up on the Blue Mountains. Fantastic walk, and thanks to the rats for that hide. It goes back to 2005, and everything was in pristine condition, not a drop of moisture in the container. Good to see. So, just another good one. If you're ever up in the Blue Mountains and you're looking at something to stretch you out a bit, Wild Dogs, try that one out. The GC code for that particular cache is GCN, N for November, X27. That's GCNX27. Now, I had an interesting phone call the other day while I was out at lunch from an OHS manager at a pharmaceutical company here in Sydney, telling me that he had my cache sitting on his desk. Now, at first I thought, well, you know, why do you have it? It was hidden on public land. Anyway, it turns out that he was doing some surveillance around the site at this pharmaceutical company and stumbled across the cache, which turned out to only be a couple of meters from their fence line. Now, when I hit it there, I didn't think it was near a pharmaceutical factory. And he asked that I don't hide it back in that location. It was an ammo can. It was hidden under a boardwalk. Thankfully, you know, because I had left my contact details in the cache, I was very lucky that he had someone to call. So he gave me a call straight away and I retrieved it. Now, that probably saved me a good $15 for the ammo can and maybe another $10 for the contents. So I really appreciated being able to pick that up. But in hindsight, after I went back and looked at how close it was only about 5 minutes from the fence line. And quite rightly, he was concerned that a facility like that, which has, as he pointed out, things of interest to bikey clubs and other groups who might want to get in there, felt it was probably best not to have a cache near there, and I've agreed to take it away. So just one thing to consider, you know, even though you might be hiding a cache on public land, could it be close to a facility or somewhere that might cause problems later on, problems that you might not have thought of in the first place? Anyway, I'll have to find somewhere else to hide that ammo can now. Now, if you subscribe to the weekly update from Groundspeak, usually comes out every Friday afternoon or Saturday morning, depending on where you live, you'll get some good tips and tricks and hints on geocaching. One that I thought I'd share with you, which was a great one from a few weeks back, was great log tips on how to write a great log, particularly a found it log. So instead of writing the TFTC, thanks for the cache, or the TNLN, which I seem to see a lot of these days, or even just a found it or nice cache, here's five tips on how to write a more detailed and more interesting log. So tip one is see it and say it. So describe what you saw and experienced on the way to the cache. Did you see a red bird or a hidden waterfall? Or did you bump into George Clooney or maybe Hugh Jackman if you're down here in Australia? So tell everyone what you experienced. Tip two, be a superhero. If there are new conditions in the area, such a fallen tree, or maybe you experience, come across a snake in the area, warn other caches about that. Tip number three, talk about the trades. Tell people what was in the container, along with what you took out and what you left. Tip number four, shout out for the cache owner. Thank the owner. Give him a thanks for placing the cache in the first place. And tip number five, learn from others. As part of the Lost and Found promotion that Groundspeak held in 2010, they asked people to nominate great geocaching logs. So have a look at the nominations that they have on their website. Now, they've included that on their Latitude 47 website. I'll give you a link to that in the show notes, so check that out. But there's five tips on how to write a better log, something a little bit more than TFTC. Now, if you've been following geocaching news for a few months now, you would have known that earlier this year there was a 2-month trial of event caches that were organized for event hunts in Canada's Ontario province. So currently events can be held for get-togethers that are geocaching related, but they cannot be put together for the purpose of a hunt. And Groundspeak decided to trial with a geocaching association in Ontario is to see whether how that would work and what would happen in that. Now, Sandy Barker, who's the community relations manager at Groundspeak, recently on their in their forums announced that that project is now on the back burner for the time being. So at this stage, Groundspeak are still not allowing events to be organised for the sake of hunting geocaches. Of course, there are little ways around that, and you can all come up with your own ideas as to how you do that. But I know with the Geocaching New South Wales Association, what we do is when we organise walks, which happen to go past geocaches, we still organise the event at the finishing point. So those who don't want to do the walk can still turn up to the event. But anyway, that's some news from Groundspeak on event cache hunts. Time's ticking down to the last couple of weeks before the New Zealand mega event, which starts on the Labour long weekend over in New Zealand, which is around the 19th, 20, 21 and 22 of October. I haven't gone too far with that. I'm heading over. Unfortunately, I'm just going by myself, but I'm looking forward to having some fun and catching up with both Australians and locals while I'm over there. So if you happen to bump into you, say g'day. If you recognise me and see me, by all means, say hello. If you've got any tips on how to find some of the harder caches, let me know as well. My aim when I go over there is to find the five oldest caches in the South Island of New Zealand, which happen to all be around the Dunedin area. So that's where I'm going. I'm also going to see if I can knock off a few of the caches that are in the old school challenge that's there in the South Island. We've mentioned that in a previous podcast. And also maybe just see if I can just go crazy and get quite a few numbers. There are rumours going around that some people are trying some very, very heady number targets, and we're talking four figures, and we're not just talking for the whole period that they're there, but in very short time spans. So I expect when we come back from New Zealand, when New Zealand mega event's all over, to hear of some fairly big records that have been set over there. And of course, Jeremy from Groundspeak and a few other Groundspeak people will be coming over to the mega event. So it should be a good time over there. We'll hopefully do our next episode before we head over to New Zealand, and then we'll do a special one from the New Zealand mega event. But if you're heading over, why not drop us a call and let us know what you're doing to prepare for the New Zealand mega event. And briefly, before we head across the ditch to New Zealand to catch up with news over there with Alan, just a brief shout out to everyone in the central area of Victoria, the central and northeastern area of Victoria. I heard news through the forums that one of the geocaches from that region, Purple Dreamer, recently passed away. Our condolences to Purple Dreamer's family and to all the geocaches in the area that that knew her quite well. There is an event that's being held to remember Purple Dreamer, and the code for that is GC3WMQQ. That's coming up very soon. So if you're in the area, you want to head up to Wangaratta, which is in northeast Victoria, check out GC3WMQQ. Well, now it's time to head over to Hamilton and catch up with Alan, Radio Nut 50.
Yeah, hi there to all Acacias from Radio Nut 50 in Hamilton, New Zealand, with some local comment from the land of the long white cloud, fairly appropriate over the last few weeks' weather. Last year talk, I spoke of a new series of caches called CANZ, Caching Around New Zealand. This is a special series that includes a cache in each of the official regions of New Zealand. Each one has got a three-digit code in the box, and then there's a North Island and a South Island intermediate, followed by a national final. To achieve the final, therefore, you'd have to have visited great locations all around our country. Well, Linda and I are the owners of one of the regional caches, so it got us pretty interested in having a go at the series. We've so far collected four codes from the North Island intermediate. Well, today's news, though, is that the North Island intermediate's had a first to find. After sitting for a couple of months with not a lot of activity, there's been a bit of a flurry across the caches, and then last weekend a log appeared from my friend Richard, who caches under the name of Zorgon. His text reads, "I only discovered the Cairns series 10 days or so ago, but it quickly turned into an obsession. Did the northern ones last weekend and then decided on Thursday to have a crack at the North Island semi first to find. I ended up driving over 1,600 kilometres this weekend to nab 5 Cairns caches. How delightfully pointless, but oh, so much fun." Well, Linda and I spent last weekend in the Taranaki area, and we looped around on our homeward trip through Manawatu and we grabbed 2 regional caches there. We're off to Nelson this weekend, and we're grabbing a couple of the South Island Cairns caches, working towards that intermediate as well, but it could be a little while before we get through the system. Yeah, as I mentioned, we were in New Plymouth last weekend, and one of our objectives was to walk the New Plymouth Coastal Walkway to Bell Block. This is a fantastic walkway. It's around 11 kilometres long, it's all concrete paved, and so it's wheelchair friendly, and you meet families and people of all shapes and sizes. This trail's got a good sprinkling of caches on it, of course, so it's a wonderful way to spend some caching time. I'd recommend a trip there if you had the chance. A couple of weeks back, I did a rescue mission to the central plateau of the North Island, where two of our, in fact, our most distant caches were both reported missing. A quick road trip of around 500 kilometres return to Owakuni from Hamilton, with the company of Mark of the Geocoolies, had a mixed outcome. Of the two caches having the DNFs reported, one was in place where it should have been. The other was definitely missing. You know, when you head off to replace a cache, and then you find it's still actually there, you experience mixed emotions. On one hand, you feel a bit frustrated you've gone to all of that way for nothing. But on the other hand, you're pretty happy to see that your cache is still there in the boxes waiting for people. At that second cache, which is the historic location where New Zealand's main Wellington to Auckland railway was completed just over 100 years ago with a ceremonial last spike placing ceremony, it was gone. I took the opportunity this time to hide a real cache. I popped in one of my dwindling stock of large steel ammo cans, and I'm still waiting for the first to find, though. It'll be good to see a log come in on that one soon. Now, last podcast I mentioned I was searching for a geocaching Android application that could store the maps locally on the phone, so then it could be useful in areas without cell phone coverage. Well, many thanks. There's been several listeners dropping in notes pointing me to an application called Locus, L-O-C-U-S, or Locus Pro for the ad-free version. This is a pretty good general mapping application with a geocaching add-in. And yes, it has several options for storing local maps, both downloading and caching copies of online maps or loading vector maps directly. So far, I've had a bit of a dabble with it. and it certainly does perform. As usual, though, the caching interface is quite different from all the others I've used. They all seem to be different. There's GroundSpeaks app, Neon Geo, CacheSense, CGO. They're all a little bit different. So it'll take me a little while to evaluate this one and get an idea how it works. Well, my last quick topic here, I must confess, I've succumbed and I've purchased a new GPS receiver. Having used several Garmins in our caching time, starting out with a little black GPS 2, I wonder how many remember those, I have been admiring a friend's Garmin Montana for quite a while, and finally decided to go for it. This is a crossover GPS, providing the functionality of our in-car Nuvi 3760 and the caching ability of our very portable Oregon 550, all in one device. So far, we've found it's a great success. I've only had it for a couple of weeks, though. The Nuvi's been sold online, and the Oregon is about to go soon. The Montana does perform pretty well as a Nuvi in a car. It's much more configurable in the interface and what it displays, though. Perhaps we'll give a more detailed summary of the device in a later podcast. Okay, it's to go for a quick roundup of events in New Zealand that are coming up soon. In the North Island, there's a cache called the Incremental Event 10-11-12. It's in Palmerston North and listed for the 10th of November. There's a Puzzle Skills Day in Mount Albert, Auckland, listed on the 1st of December. An event with a curious title, 12-12-12, End of the World Multi-Event, listed in Newlyn, Auckland, on the 12th of December. In the South Island, there's an interesting series of 7 events, all with the title, Over the Rainbow, and then each with a unique colour theme. Starting on the 28th of October, going through to the 9th of December, all in restaurants spread around the Nelson and Tasman areas. And there's a 12-12-12, it's the end of the world event, listed in December, on the 12th of December also. Then, of course, there's the great first New Zealand mega event. It's almost here on the 20th of October. Linda and I will be there, looking forward to meeting you and lots of caches. Okay, back to you now, Darren.
Well, thanks very much for that, Alan, for that update over in New Zealand. I'm looking forward to catching up with you in a few weeks' time. Well, it's time now for the GeoTalk trivia question, and the question for this episode is, which state or island in Australia and New Zealand has the most number of caches per 1,000 head of population? So which state or island of New Zealand or Australia has the most number of caches per 1,000 head of population? The answer to that at the end of the podcast. If you've been geocaching for quite a while, you might know of a particular type of cache called the Project Ape caches. They were first placed back in 2001, but only one of them remains, hidden deep in the dark jungles of Brazil. Well, maybe not that deep. But anyway, there's a project to see if we can relocate the two that were originally hidden in Australia back in 2001. And the person who's leading that project is Carl from geostuff.com.au. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Darren.
Well, Carl, tell us a little bit about Project Ape and then how you've gotten involved in it. Why are you searching for these missing caches?
Yeah, Project Ape caches that were in Australia, there were actually two of them. They're really historical items. Not many of us had a chance to actually see these items and actually find them in the wild, as it were. So it would be really interesting to find them again, but also there's a tantalizing possibility of being able to resurrect, even temporarily, one of those caches. And so we thought, wouldn't it be fantastic to offer a reward for these within the caching community and within the greater community to try and get people to try and find where these containers actually are.
Now, there was one that was hidden down in Melbourne and another one, I think, up in Byron Bay. Yeah. Now,
yes.
They went fairly quickly, though, didn't they? They didn't last very long.
Yeah, they're only around a couple of months. You got to think about this. This was really sort of 2001. It was the very early days of caching. And people really weren't hiding that many really sort of sneaky or well-camouflaged hides. And they were a little bit out in the open. And in fact, if you take the example of the ones in There was one in Central Park in New York, which was kind of just under a bridge. So they weren't very, very well camouflaged, and they went very quickly within the first couple of months. Really, either of them only had a few finders. So there was one that was in a park in Wattle Park in around the Burwood area of Melbourne, another one which was in Tallow Beach in near Byron Bay, just east of Byron Bay.
Now, apart from the logs, I had a read through them again the other day to sort of get an idea of myself what might have happened to them. Have you been given any other information to suggest that they might be around? Have you got any idea who might have them or where they might have ended up?
No, we really don't. So I've been trying to contact the local press in those areas because I think in the end these boxes aren't really going to be in the caching community. But pretty unlikely that a cache has walked off with one. They're more likely to be in the sort of general community. You know, someone's found one, taken it home, and is now using it as storage in their garage. So I've been trying to get to the sort of greater community in those two areas. Haven't had a lot of success with the press yet, I have to say. So if anyone knows any hints about how to get into the press, that would be great. But I really want to promote it in those particular areas so to see if we can see the general public. I still think it's most likely that the general public has them.
Okay. Now, to try and flush them out, you've created a reward, a $500 yep. reward. So what are the conditions on that?
Well, the main condition is that if someone we're taking this from a sort of no questions asked perspective. You know, one of these things might be in someone's garage. They found it in the wild and took it home. And we'll happily pay $500 for each of those boxes. It'd be fantastic if both of them came up. We have to pay out $1,000. That would be awesome. But we'll pay $500 for one. Now, what we need to be able to do is to actually verify that it's original and real. The boxes or the ammo cans themselves are of a certain size, and they actually have certain markings. I've spoken to Groundspeak themselves, and they've actually agreed to be able to verify those for me. That may involve actually sending the box to Groundspeak, or it may involve taking some very detailed photographs and some measurements and those kinds of things. And when we've verified that they are real, then we'll be able to pay that out. Mm-hmm.
So have Groundspeak indicated that if they are found, would those caches be reactivated?
I've asked that question, to which I haven't really received any commitment. I know if you look at the some of the forums when some of the original the Tunnel of Light one near Seattle went missing. When you see the discussions about those, the issue about ape caches is really the container. Groundspeak always said the container is the most important part, and they actually archived the container when when the container went missing. So I think it's really important that we try and find that container, and I'd love to get to a situation where I could have, you know, even just an afternoon of a resurrected ape cache, and how great would that be for Australia?
Okay, so obviously if anyone has any clues or ideas as to where this might be, how do they get in touch with you?
They can go to my website, which is shop.geostuff.com.au, and there's a /ape, and there's a form on there that they can fill in if they have any ideas. And happily follow those up.
Well, best of luck, I think, for the whole of the geocaching community, particularly in Australia. We'd love to be able to see it and to make our lives easier to get that particular type of cache rather than having to save up all our pennies and head over to Brazil.
Yes, the offer's open until the middle of 2013. And, you know, even if we don't find one by that point, I may even extend it beyond that because I think this is something that even if we're not able to resurrect one of the ape caches, it would be great to be able to, you know, someone to touch and feel a real ape container. So that would be even better.
Well, Carl, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast.
Right,
and we hope you find it very soon.
Thanks very much. Cheers, Darren.
Our thanks once again to Carl for that interview and telling us a bit about the reward for the ape cache. Now, in a little bit of an update, It's Not About the Numbers blog has actually interviewed Glenn Capuano, also known as Quasar. Now, Quasar is a cacher from Victoria who's been caching since almost day dot, and he actually happened to be the first to find on the ape cache down in Melbourne. And you can read, I'll give you a link in the show notes there, or head to the It's Not About the Numbers blog at notaboutthenumbers.com. And you can read the interview about his experience. He's also interested in finding out who hid that cache, because he suspects it must have been a local, and I would agree, it must have been a local cacher, and there weren't many in Victoria at the time. So if you happen to be the person that hid the cache, let us know. We'd love to find out the story behind how you got your hands on the ape cache and how you went about hiding it. Well, it's time to have a look at some of the events occurring around the country. And before we do, we got an email from the talent, a.k.a. Ben, up in central Queensland, who writes in to say that both himself, Dugan, and Timaji are organising a weekend series of events up in central Queensland over in Rockhampton under the profile of Geocaching Central Queensland. The events are being held on the Friday, Saturday and Sunday, which is the 16th, 17th and 18th of November. They've got two shortish power trails that they're organising, and at least one of each type of currently available cache. So if you're trying to look at, you know, knocking off as many different types in one day, you can do that. He says he's working out how to do a Where I Go cartridge at the moment, and also organise an Earth cache. So hopefully that'll all be done fairly soon. They're hoping to get at least 50 people. When I last checked, there was about a dozen teams, so you're looking at about 25 or 30 odd. So they're on target. So check that out. It's GCQ Sunday, or both Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in the Hamptons, 2012. The event's going to be held in Rockhampton in central Queensland. Looks like a fun time. And if you're going up for the total solar eclipse up in far north Queensland, you might drop in there on the way back home if you're heading back down south. Now, for the rest of events that are occurring in the month of October, there is a really long list, so I'm going to have to go through these as quick as I can. On the 1st of October in Morgan in South Australia is Don't Trash Glue Pot, and then over in Mackay in Queensland is Mad Cache's Tea Party. On the 6th of October, we've got the Kicking Round Kenmore GeoGain in southwest Brisbane. In Kangaroo Flat in Victoria, there's Farewell to Those Going to NZ Mega. And in Adelaide in Parafield, there's the Let's Cito Little Para Trail. The next day, on the 7th of October, is the Geocaching 102 event in Hobart, Tasmania, and the York Peninsula Caches Get Together number 4 in Kadena. On the 9th of October in the Adelaide Hills is the Compass Diners East event that's occurring. On the 10th of October is the October Sundowners event being held in Darwin in the Northern Territory. On the 13th of October in North Brisbane is a Hidden World Visiting Netherland. In Lakes Entrance over in Victoria is the Meet and Greet East Gippsland. And in Wallsend in New South Wales is the Havoc Family Barbecue. On the 14th of October in Glenbrook in New South Wales is the Spring Caching in the Blueies, 2012 edition. On the 15th of October in Brisbane is the City Cacher Catch-Up number 4. Down in Victoria on the 16th of October is 888. And on the 27th of October in Wodonga is the Aubrey Wodonga Geocaches Meet and Greet. And finally, on the 28th of October in Barara Waters, north of Sydney, New South Wales, is a Great Northern Walk by the River. So that's the full list of events that are occurring around the country. And I'll give you a link to a post that I'll put up in the next day or two, or putting up in the next day or two, on how to create a map so you can see all the events that are occurring around the country. It's very simple. If you've got a premium account, I'll show you how to use a pocket query and the maps feature in the geocaching.com app, and you can check out where all the events are occurring around the country in at any one time. Well, it's time now to go into the GeoTalk mailbag. And before we get into the emails, let's go first down to Victoria. And we've got a phone call from Splatum.
G'day, Dan and the GeoTalk podcast listeners. This is Splatum calling from Melbourne. I'm here with Dr. Jim, Josie Y and Sinbury. And we're on the chase for a night cache at the moment. I'll have a GC code available shortly. We're in the back blocks of suburb deleted. And we're heading towards second suburb deleted. and having a great time. We believe we're between waypoints 6 and 7 and potentially approaching GZ with a little bit of Intrepid 8. We've been intercepted by a possible muggle who could also be known by the name of Al-Qaeda. That's Al-Qaeda. Or not entirely sure. It could be Terry. Might have been Terry Rest. Not too sure. And the GC code for this one, 3BY5N in November. And, yeah, we're not too far away from GZ. Might give you a call when we get there and let you know how we're going. So far we've enjoyed quite a few different aspects of what you'd expect to find on a night cache, and we're having a great time. Yeah, we'll give you a bit more info when we get a bit closer. Cheers for now.
Well, let's now turn to the JR Talk mailbag, and we've got a few items here. First of all, Lisa and Andrew, also known as Sensible Shoes here in Sydney, just wanted to let us know that they found their 250th cache on International Geocaching Day. It's taken them 5 1/4 years to get there, but they finally made it. I've certainly been slowed down since our sons were born, but they're now old enough to come out and go caching with us. Hopefully it will take us less than 5 years to get our next 250 to reach 500. Love the show and keep up the good work. Thanks for that, Lisa and Andrew. And it's quite funny. I think we bumped into each other, probably not on that particular cache, but certainly on that day. We were both looking for caches on International Geocaching Day, and our paths crossed. It was great to see you again. Another email we got here from Kat and Peter, known as P-Press, up on the mid-north coast of New South Wales, say they're finally on the road again after 7 months of lying low while Kat went through the horrific surgery and treatment for breast cancer. Her final radiotherapy session was on the 5th of September at 10 a.m. and by 11 a.m. they were towing their van on the Oxley Highway heading for Armidale. Kat's now doing well and getting stronger and fitter every day and was helped tremendously by the support of friends in the caching community. As a reward for getting through the seemingly endless ordeal, they've decided to head to Melbourne and visit their children and friends. They're taking the long way around through the centre of New South Wales through Armidale, Tamworth, Gunnedah, Warren Bungles, Dubbo, Tokemwall and Mombolk, etc., Mombolk's in Victoria, where their daughter lives. Take them 12 days and they expect a cache along the way and pick up a number of the older caches that have been placed before they went starting. We're also trying to get a number of the, try to get all the active caches in New South Wales before they started, which they say is a tough ask. They wanted to say that they've downloaded the Geo podcast for the trip to get back in the mood, and they want to wish everyone all the best and look forward to catching up with everyone at the New Zealand Mega event. And Kat and Peter, look, well done, and my thoughts are with you, Kat. I know we bumped into each other at the Mega event down in Albury, Albury-Wodonga. It was just soon after you had started your chemotherapy, and well done. And also to everyone else who's fighting their battles, their medical battles. I know that a number of friends, many close and dear, have been through some fairly horrific experiences over the last few years. And look, our thoughts go to all of you, and we know that, you know, give it time, you'll all be back on the caching trail in no time. And Peter just wanted to point out before he goes to mention that there's a new series of caches in the Mid-North Coast called the Mid-North Coast Wander. There's 201 caches that have been set out, all with very impressive scenery, and with the weather warming up in the area, there's nothing better to do than head up there and try them all out. And also you can check out the Crazy First to Finders. I think it was Big Matt and Shell and Marcus Vitruvius who managed to find almost all 200 of them as the FTFs in some fairly atrocious conditions. Got another email from Canberra from Craig, also known as Majura Harty. I think that's Harty or Harthy. I wanted to say that enjoying the podcast and only discovered them a couple of months ago while trying to solve Tilby's Axis of Evil puzzles in Canberra, and was going back through them all and enjoying the reverse history as they came down each episode. But Craig mentions he only got back as far as episode 8. Where can he get episodes 1 to 7? Now, it turns out that anything before episode 8, and it could be even getting further forward, isn't listed on iTunes, and I must admit I couldn't find them on my web host either. Now, the one way in which you can go back and find them, and I'll give you a link in the show notes on how to do this, also notes in the show notes, is you need to type in the URL traffic.libsyn.com. So that's traffic.libsyn.com/geotalk, and then the episode name, which is /geotalk_episode, and then type in the 2-digit number .mp3. Now, that's all a bit hard to try and remember, so I'll give you that link in the show notes and try that out. Hopefully we'll find an easier way to do that. And thanks, Craig, for that email. You've also reminded me that if you haven't done the Axis of Evil puzzle caches, there's a good number of them. Most of them still exist to this day. You can try those out. You've got to go back to, I think, episodes 31, 32, and 33 of the podcast. Now, it's going back a bit, but certainly a lot of fun. I've done a few of them, and maybe I should try and find more of them. And before we finish up, let's go back to Victoria and catch up with Splatum to see how him and the crew went.
G'day, Darren and the podcast listeners. This is Splatum. And Sinbrew, Tercy Y.
Dr. Jim 7.
And we're looking for a night cache called Spy vs. Spy Number 1, Broken Arrow. The GC code is GC3BY5N. That's GC3BY5N. Really good night cache. We've now finished it. We've signed our names in the logs, and it turns out we were first to find. Had a great time over about a 2.5-hour period, including travel. Difficulty 4, terrain 2.5. Incorporated a whole lot of really good aspects you look forward to finding in a night cache. Don't want to give too much away. In the end, we found a small. According to the cache page, we travelled about 15 kilometres. And, we sort of merged into one car. We're able to pull our resources, which was great because my UV torch failed and Jim's didn't. My battery was going flat, but Jim had the charger power monkey or whatever it's called. We had a great time. Highly recommend the cache. I'll be giving it a favourite, and imagine these guys will as well. Thanks very much. Until next time.
Well, thanks for that call. Now, if you want to send in an email or a phone call to GeoTalk, it's fairly simple. If you want to send an email, send it in to geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. Or if you want to phone it in, just dial in 02 for Sydney, 800-5436. That's 800-5436. If you're calling from New Zealand, don't forget to put the country code 61 and then area code 2. Or you can record it on your phone or on an MP3 device and email it into that geotalkpodcast@gmail.com email address. Well, before we finish up, we better give you the answers to the trivia question for this episode, and that is which state or territory or island in Australia and New Zealand has the most number of caches per 1,000 head of population? And going in reverse order, we'll start with New South Wales with 1.49, Queensland with 1.61, Victoria with 1.70, North Island, New Zealand with 2.63, Western Australia with 3.32, Tasmania leaps up to 4.98, the ACT with 5.40, Northern Territory with 5.41, South Australia with 5.66, and that leaves the South Island of New Zealand with the most number of caches per 1,000 head of population, 6.99. I think after the mega event, that number might even go a little bit higher. Well, that's all for this episode of GeoTalk. Until next time, safe geocaching.